This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Throughout Joe Torre's long baseball career, he hoped to make it to the World Series, but he didn't get there until after more than 4,200 games, when in 1996, during his first season managing the New York Yankees, he led the team to their first World Championship since 1978. They won again last year and this year. Before joining the Yankees, Torre managed the St. Louis Cardinals and the Atlanta Braves and played for a total of 17 seasons with the Braves, Cardinals, and Mets. He was named the National League's Most Valuable Player in 1971. Now Torre has a new book called Joe Torre's Ground Rules for Winners. I asked him how winning the World Series compares to what he imagined it would be like.
Well, first off, when you've played baseball, and let's put it this way, you've been involved in baseball for over 30 years, knowing that the one thing that was missing was getting to the World Series. I mean, this to me was nirvana. And then once you get there, of course, you want to win. And then when you do win, there it's absolutely the best feeling in the world, probably better than you anticipated it would be, probably because it relieved all that baggage you've been carrying around as the missing part of it. And then when you do it 3 out of 4 years, it's absolutely nuts. I mean, it's just something that I can't describe, and it just gives you a different feel the way you act, basically. It's just it keeps a smile on your face constantly, I think, is the best way to describe it.
This is a difficult season for you. You were diagnosed with prostate cancer just before the season started, and you had have surgery and then recuperate for a couple of months. Does the relative importance of baseball change when you're facing, you know, a possibly life-threatening illness?
No, there's no question. The perspective, realizing that what you're doing on the field is just a game, and even though you'd still go out there and sell your soul for a win in a key situation, it still certainly allowed me just to let it go. I mean, if we had a tough loss, which we did in the middle of the year against the New York Mets. About an hour and a half later, the loss in my mind was gone. And I think that was a change for me.
You know, you were diagnosed with a prostate cancer, I think, just before spring training. Were you afraid that even if you were able to go back to work, which of course you were, that people would lose confidence in your stamina and question whether you could, you know, give enough for the season or even be healthy enough for the season? I'm wondering what Steinbrenner had to say to you about that.
Well, I'll be perfectly honest with you, Terry. I didn't know. First of all, baseball is the furthest thing from my mind when I was diagnosed. I mean, I didn't know if I was going to come back. I didn't care if I was going to come back. I had to take care of this before I could really think about what my future was going to be. I was more concerned that I had a three-year-old daughter, Andrea, that I wanted to be around for. That was my first priority. And as far as George Steinbrenner, every time I had to go someplace to get a scan or an X-ray and get test results, George was right there for me. And you know, I know you hear a lot of horror stories about George Steinbrenner, but, you know, he was a rock for me, and I really appreciated that. As far as going back to manage, I didn't know how it was going to feel. I can be perfectly honest with you. I was going to wait until my stamina did come back. That's the one thing. When you go through surgery, your blood count goes down, so you're anemic. And I came to the ballpark every single day that we were at Yankee Stadium and watched from upstairs and mingled around the players. I thought it was important that the players see that I'm walking around and see that I feel pretty good and a little tired, a little weak. And I got myself to the point where doctors told me I can go back anytime I felt like it, and I think I probably waited 3 weeks beyond that, only because once you go back, there's no looking back. You 7 days a week. You can't be saying, well, I can rest up on the weekend. So I knew before I decided to go back, I had to be 100% sure that my endurance was going to be there, and I never had a problem once I put the uniform on. And I happened to put the uniform on in Boston. My first game back, I was sitting with my wife the night before having dinner. I said, I'm thinking of going to work in a couple of days. She says, if you're thinking about it in a couple of days, why not tomorrow? And that's what happened. I had dinner, spent the night at home, flew up to Boston the next day, and the players walked in and saw me in uniform. And it was just the way I wanted it, basically. No fanfare, and let's just go play baseball.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Joe Torre, manager of the Yankees, now author of a new book called Ground Rules for Winners. You grew up in Brooklyn. What team did you and your family root for?
We rooted for the New York Giants, which was very dangerous.
It was dangerous?
Well, you live in Brooklyn. Yeah. You're either a Dodgers fan or a Dodgers fan.
Mm-hmm.
So I was, I guess, being the youngest of five children, I did what my older siblings did, and everybody rooted for the Giants, the Willie Mays people, and that was good enough for me. In 1951, when Bobby Thompson hit that home run off Ralph Branca, I was 11 years old. And it was quite a celebration in our house, not in our neighborhood, but in our house. And then when the Giants and Dodgers moved out after the 1957 season, it was pretty quiet here. All we had were the Yankees, and the Yankees used to win every year, so they weren't really fun to root for because they would win all the time. Of course, by that time, my brother Frank was playing with the Milwaukee Braves, and I was a Braves rooter for that reason. But we've been a baseball household from day one, and I was fortunate because of my brother Frank and my dad, who used to be a detective, would get tickets for postseason games, World Series games, and I got to see quite a few of them.
Now, you write about how your father had a very bad temper, and you say that although he never physically abused you, he did verbally abuse you, and I guess he occasionally hit your mother. Was controlling your temper on the field ever an issue?
No, I'd snap every once in a while, but I was never a confrontational person. I didn't like confrontation. I didn't like loud noises. I didn't like loud banging, phone calls in the middle of the night. And I have to think in growing up in my house, that was part of the fright that my father brought to the house every day. He'd sleep late. He'd get in late at night. If you made any noise, you would hear him. Again, I was never physically abused, but sometimes maybe being physically abused isn't as bad as the fright from thinking you will be and being screamed at all the time.
Well, what did the boys do when your mother was hit?
Well, I don't know. The boys weren't around. I think he just did that in front of my older sister, Ray, who was pretty much alone with my mom in the house, with my dad and myself. I never witnessed it myself, but I was told that she was hit. I know he used to have a gun in the house because he was a policeman, and he used to go to that drawer a number of times. I remember that vividly, and it was scary for me. It still gives me goosebumps when I think of it.
How old were you when your older brother Frank got to the minor leagues?
I was 10 going on 11 when he was he played in Denver, which was the Class A affiliate of the Milwaukee Braves. I remember visiting him for a month or so with my sister, an aunt, and a cousin. We took a train from New York to Denver. My aunt was afraid to fly at the time, and I didn't get in an airplane myself until I was 16, and I flew to Milwaukee in my brother's first year with the Milwaukee Braves. But I was fortunate. Frank played A baseball there in Denver, and then he went to the service for 2 years. He went to Korea and came out and then played in Atlanta in 1954. I was 14 years old, and then in Toledo in 1955. And I went to both places, worked out with them. As I say, it made you feel like you were part of the team. And it was those opportunities that made me feel like I wanted to do this.
What made the biggest impression on you as a kid when you visited your brother?
Well, I think just the baseball life. He was more, my brother Frank was more of a role model for me. He always was always ate in the best restaurants. That always made an impression on me. I think that's where I got fat, eating with him all the time. But he was always a big tipper, and things I've tried to emulate, and walk around with a lot of class and do things like that. But I think it was just the baseball lifestyle, being able to meet the big leaguers like Warren Spahn and Eddie Matthews and Hank Aaron. And then finally, you know, a few years later being their teammates. But I think the big impression for me was the baseball aspect of it.
My guest is Joe Torre, manager of the Yankees. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Joe Torre, manager of the Yankees, and he's led the team to 3 World Series championships in the past 4 years. He has a new book now called Ground Rules for Winners. In your memoir, you described yourself as a shy, overweight kid. And I think you were rejected by the first scout who saw you play as being too fat and too slow. Did you feel like you had to work at changing yourself before you got to play?
Well, I had to change a position. There's no question. I was a third baseman. I was a first baseman, and I pitched in high school. But when I was 16 years old, I think I weighed 240 pounds. I had a 40-inch waist. And, of course, I wasn't fast. And so I became a catcher. I think I was 17 or 18 years old. I became a catcher. And it seemed that if you have a little extra girth on you, that catching is a spot that, you know, you'll be able to handle, and your speed isn't that big of a factor, so you don't worry about it as long as you can hit. And I was a pretty good hitter. So my brother Frank used to embarrass me. I didn't like my brother Frank. I mean, he was a role model for me, but he was very critical of me and always was a tough taskmaster, because I think he wanted me to grow up, get in shape, and not having a father in the house during my teenage years, he sort of took on that role and thought that he should be, more of a disciplinarian than my mom would be. So I didn't realize it until later on that he was doing this for my benefit. So it was, it was sort of a love-hate relationship, I guess.
Did you play on the Braves together at the same time?
Only in spring training, unfortunately. We played together in the spring of 1961, which was the year I wound up with the ball club toward the end of May. And then Frank was in the minor leagues at that time. He had been in the big leagues from 56 through 60, through 59 and part of 60, and then was sent to the minor leagues. And then we played against each other when he came back to the big leagues. He wound up at the Philadelphia Phillies in 1962, and that's where we played against each other. But the only time we played side by side, he played first and I caught, was in spring training games in 1961.
And what was that like?
Oh, it was fun. It was fun because a lot of the players, we used to have like A squad and B squad, and the B squad would be the squad that used to travel. And Charlie Dressen, who was our manager, put a lot of good players in that B squad. The Hall of Famer Warren Spahn. There was a regular shortstop, Johnny Logan. Billy Martin was on that team. And I remember catching one particular day. I hit 2 home runs against the Washington Senators in spring training, and I was catching Warren Spahn. And I remember calling. We had some mix-ups with the signal calling. And then Warren Spahn throws a curveball, and somebody hits a home run. And my brother Frank called me out in front of Warren Spahn and says, you know, we called him Hooks. That's his nickname. But we call him Hooks because he has a hook nose, not because he can throw the curveball. So it was a great time being on that B squad. I was a 20-year-old kid. And really learning a lot on those bus trips. Believe me, it was it stayed with me.
Say you called a pitch and Warren Spahn shrugged you off. Would your confidence be shaken by that?
No, because we talk about it. We talk about it. We had a lot of fun with it. We had a special. We always put a special type of sign together. We would change signs on every pitch. Something to keep the game from being boring. But Warren Spahn didn't shake me off very often, and I think I come to realize that later on he had such good control that even if he didn't want to throw a pitch, he probably wouldn't throw it for a strike. But he made me feel very comfortable. I think a big part of that, Terry, was the fact that I had met them when I was 16, 17 years old, and when I first came to the big leagues in 1961, Warren Spahn and Lou Burdette used to sort of take care of me because my brother wasn't around. They'd take me to movies during the day and, just made sure I stayed out of trouble.
Yeah, but sometimes they'll just keep thinking of you as the kid if that's the way they first know you.
Well, yeah, you're right. They did. They always did. And in fact, when I went into slumps, you know, they would come over and make sure I wouldn't get down and, again, poke me from behind. They just didn't let me wallow in it. They paid attention to me. I think that was a big benefit for me.
Do you think catching is good experience for managing because you're a strategist and also you can see the whole field from your vantage point?
No question. I think the manager probably picks on the catcher more than any other position because he does handle the pitchers and the pitchers. Pitching is 85% of the game. You know, the reason that we've been successful here over the last 3 or 4 years is the fact that we could pitch better than anybody else consistently. So because pitching is so important, I put a lot of weight on my catcher's shoulders, and I think that catchers probably are more aware of how the game is played than any other position.
Any injuries you're left with from catching, you know, crouching
well,
for so long, the impact of getting, you know, receiving the ball?
Well, I probably wake up my wife every night when I get up during the night to do one thing or another because my knees will click and crack and everything else. But for the most part, just a couple of broken fingers and some loose knees, but no major surgery that debilitated me or made me go to another position.
It's hard to crouch for so long.
You know, it hurt my feet more than anything else. I have flat feet, and when you try to squat down, the knees didn't bother me as much as my feet did. But you live with it. When you go out there and you try to get in shape for the job you do, you really stuff like that really doesn't bother you because you know it's part of what you need to do to do your job.
Are there things that, I know there's a lot that's changed in baseball since you started playing. Are there things that you wish could be the way they were when you were starting out?
Well, I don't know. I go back to before we had a Players Association when certain teams used to limit you to the number of towels you're allowed to use. So I think we've come a long way. The only thing I think I would like to have the players understand is why they're making this money, that players had played this game before they did. Some of them, you know, think they have this coming to them, and to me that's a bad attitude to have because you're not really sure other than your agent telling you that you can get this and you can get that, but I think you have to go beyond that. So I'd like to have the players understand where this all came from, understand the players like Curt Flood, who, you know, did something because he thought it was the right thing and sat out a year of baseball because he didn't think it was the right thing to get traded. So a lot of the rules have changed because of Curt Flood, but Curt passed away a couple of years ago and he lost his Supreme Court case. But believe me, what he did played a big, big part in what the players are enjoying today.
Managers spend a fair amount of time on television during a game, especially a tension-filled game like in the World Series. And I'm wondering if you're conscious of the fact that, oh, the camera's on me now. I mean, here you are in like your moment of anxiety. And are you aware when the camera's on you and when it's not? And does it matter to you?
Well, you've got to ignore it. You watch other games on television. You see how much they show the manager in those games. So you have to assume that it's on you all the time. I mean, there are so many cameras, so even if the one next to the dugout isn't on you, then maybe the one across the field is on you. But watching football, watching basketball, watching all the sports, and you see when something happens on the court or on the field, how they go right to the manager for a reaction. And, and I'm aware of that, and I don't want that reaction because if a player strikes out with the bases loaded or a ball goes through his legs with the bases loaded, he's trying. And I don't want later on the news to have that player see his manager have a disgusted look on his face. I'd rather pass on that one.
Do you try to just look as neutral as possible?
Yeah. People accuse me of being asleep and all that kind of stuff. But I try to just not show emotion. I kid with a lot of people. I say, why don't you have a smile? I said, because George Steinbrenner doesn't want to see you have a good time. But I just talk a lot with my bench coach, Don Zimmer, and my pitching coach, Mel Stottlemyre, who are two of the best in the game. And believe me, There are days when you second-guess yourself as a manager with decisions, but being able to talk it out with a Zimmer and with a Stottlemyre before you even make that decision makes that second-guessing hold to a minimum because of, going in when you use somebody as a sounding board. But again, I don't like to show emotion. I didn't do it as a player, to be honest with you, because I didn't want to give the pitcher the satisfaction of knowing he aggravated me. I'm not sure it was the right thing to do, but it was the way I did it.
So, Joe Torre, one last question. Are you already looking ahead to next season?
Not yet. I'm going to enjoy different things we do now in the off season, making speeches, going from place to place and having people all over the country congratulate us for what we accomplished. And then once the holidays are over with, once January comes around, then we'll get ourselves pumped up and get ready to go, because by that point we're only about 6 weeks away.
Right. Well, congratulations on this year and your years in general with the Yankees. It's been a great run for you. So thank you very much for talking with us.
My pleasure, Terry. Thank you.
Joe Torre is the manager of the Yankees. His new book is called Joe Torre's Ground Rules for Winners. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.